Let's get started with week number 50 of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word. We are going to begin today at the very end of the book of Joshua. As I've been telling you, there's a little bit of overlap between the end of Joshua and the beginning of the book of Judges. And the death of Joshua is listed in both of them. Now, Joshua chapter 24 ends pretty much with Joshua's death. And this is what it says in verse 29. After these things, so everything we've been reading about the final words of Joshua. After these things, Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of He Who Is, died, being 110 years old. Now that matches pretty well with the tradition that I've told you, that Joshua led Israel for about 25 years after they came into the Promised Land. He and Caleb were the two good spies when Moses sent in the 12 at the beginning of the Exodus time period. And they're the only ones that brought back a good report, and therefore they were the exceptions to the rule that everyone in that generation was going to die in the wilderness. So Caleb was in his 40s at that time. Joshua must have been in his 40s as well. And that would mean that they were both in their 80s once they did go into the Promised Land. And about 25 years after that would be very close to 110 years old for Joshua. So verse 30 reports, they buried him in his inheritance at Timnath-Serah, which is in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gaash. And that is also reported over in the book of Judges. Let me read it to you from there. I'm going to start in verse 6, where it says in chapter 2 of Judges, when Joshua dismissed the people, that would be after the dividing of the inheritance to the different tribes, the people of Israel went each to his inheritance to take possession of the land. The people served He Who Is all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the work, the great work that He Who Is had done for Israel. So the reason this is being brought up in the book of Judges is because there's a pattern we're going to see established. That as long as there is a strong leader around, the people of Israel tend to behave themselves. There is sin going on. Sometimes it's barely under the surface. But the leader kind of makes everybody toe the line. Once that leader starts getting old, and once that leader passes away, too often the sin explodes to the surface. It comes out into the public, and that's going to bring the judgment of God upon the Israelis, just as God warned them would be the case. Now here comes the parallel from our Joshua passage, Judges 2:8. Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of He Who Is, died at the age of 110 years, They buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, it says Timnath-Serah in Joshua, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gaash. So those words, pretty much the same words, minor variations between the two books. It says in verse 10 of Judges 2, all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know He Who Is or the work that He had done for Israel. So that's the beginning of this horrible cycle that we'll see in the book of Judges. But it starts with the dying off of that whole generation that had personally witnessed the exodus from Egypt. Now, Joshua and Caleb were the only ones of the oldest generation that saw that. The next generation below them is about 20 years younger. They would have been in their teens during the time of the Exodus, so they would have had a fairly decent remembrance of it. And then the next decade of people underneath them would have been in their preteens and would have had kind of a shadowy or faint, maybe even no recollection of the Exodus events. So this is important to see that group that knew what it was really like to have been in slavery and then miraculously saved by God, that generation is dying off with Joshua. Now let's go back to the Joshua passage. This is chapter 24 of Joshua again, verse 31. Israel served he who is all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, and had known all the work that he who is had done for Israel. So again, repeating that very important information. Verse 32, as for the bones of Joseph, which the people of Israel brought out up from Egypt, they buried them at Shechem. So you remember that the sarcophagus, the bone box of Joseph, was brought by the Israelites out of Egypt when they left. And so by the time we're looking at it here in the end of Joshua, it would have been 4+ decades that Joseph's bone box had been on the move. And now they keep the promise that had been made to him hundreds of years earlier when he was getting ready to die and be embalmed. They buried him at Shechem in the piece of land that Jacob bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money. And it became an inheritance of the descendants of Joseph. So Joseph's direct descendants ended up with inheritance at Shechem. And they buried their ancestor, their revered ancestor, there at Shechem, on the little bit of property that Jacob had paid the local authorities of Shechem for the right to pitch his tent. It would have been somewhere near Jacob's well. And that's where they inter him, is at Shechem. Verse 33, and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died, and they buried him at Gibeah, the town of Phinehas, his son, which had been given him in the hill country of Ephraim. So Phinehas becomes the new high priest after his father Eleazar passes away, and Phinehas buries his father in his own town, and we move on now, having lost all of that generation that has any personal recollection of what God had done in the Exodus. Now let's return to the book of Judges, chapter 2, verse 11. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of he who is, and served the Baalim, the Baals, as you're more likely to have pronounced this. Baal is just the Canaanite word for Lord or Master, and it is typically a reference to the thunder and lightning god that is toward the top of the pantheon of the Canaanite people. He is the god that brings the rain to the ground so that it will bring forth its produce. And so the Israelis, after they've lost the leadership of Joshua and others, began playing footsie with the Canaanite pantheon of gods, including the thunder and lightning god, Baal. Not all of them. There will be a remnant that will remain righteous and honorable. And unfortunately, there will be some who are playing both sides of the divine fence. They will go and do all of the customary things of worship for He who is the true and living God, but they'll also do the traditional things, maybe on the sly sometimes, of the local deities of the Canaanites, Baal, the very thing that God had warned them against and the reason why they were supposed to chase out all of the Canaanites and execute any of them that tried to stay and totally obliterate any of the worship sites left behind by them. Continuing in the book of Judges, chapter 2, verse 12. And they abandoned He who is the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed down to them. And they provoked He who is to anger. And that is exactly what God warned them. If you worship these other gods and goddesses, I will have to judge you. Verse 13. They abandoned He who is and served the Baalim. That's the plural in Hebrew of Baal. And the reason it's plural is because even though there was one Baal that they typically worshipped, and they had the same mindset of him being the thunder and lightning god, he had lots of idols, that is, physical images of him that were scattered over the land. So the reference here to the plural is that they are worshiping at all the different idols that represent Baal. And the same is true about the next god that's mentioned, and the Ashtaroth. That has a feminine plural ending on it. Asherah was the mother goddess of the Canaanites. She was the queen of heaven. That was one of her titles. She was the fertility goddess of the ground and the grain, and the one that provided abundance of offspring to people. That's the Canaanite belief about her. And since she was worshipped through idols, and there were multitudes of them around, the plural is also used here. So Baal and Ashtaroth are both worshipped by the Israelites in a multitude of places, and it's not a good thing. Verse 14, so the anger of He who is was kindled against Israel, and He gave them over to plunderers who plundered them, and He sold them into the hand of their surrounding enemies so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. Whenever they marched out, the hand of He who is was against them for harm, as He who is had warned, and as He who is had sworn to them, and they were in terrible distress. So God had told them through Moses, there in the end of the book of Deuteronomy, we see this recorded, that God would bless them if they remained faithful to the covenant. If they blew the covenant off, that would trigger judgment from God, curses from God. And the most obvious one of those is God would no longer protect them from the evil actions of others. And they would come under the boot of the Canaanites and other peoples taking advantage of them. Now, this is where we now see the pattern, starting at verse number 16. Then He who is raised up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. Yet they did not listen to their judges, for they whored after other gods and bowed down to them. They soon turned aside from the way in which their fathers had walked, who had obeyed the commandments of He Who Is, and they did not do so. Whenever He Who Is raised up a judge for them, or up judges, plural, for them, He Who Is was with the judge, and He saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For He Who Is was moved to pity by their groaning because of those who afflicted and oppressed them. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and were more corrupt than their fathers, going after other gods, serving them, and bowing down to them. They did not drop any of their practices or their stubborn ways. So the anger of He Who Is was kindled against Israel, and He said, "Because this people has transgressed my covenant that I commanded their fathers and have not obeyed my voice, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations that Joshua left when he died, in order to test Israel by them whether they will take care to walk in the way of He Who Is as their fathers did or not." So He Who Is left those nations, remember the people groups is what we're talking about, not driving them out quickly, and He did not give them into the hand of Joshua. So the pattern is this. As long as there is a strong leader who is backed up supernaturally by He Who Is, the Israelis will typically behave themselves, at least keep their tendencies to worship other gods and goddesses hidden out of sight or done on the sly. But the moment that judge grows old or dies, all of that sin bubbles up or bursts up to the surface again. The people engage openly in pagan worship rituals. And so God has to keep His covenant and judge them. And He judges them by letting other nations come in and take advantage of them, take their stuff. And this causes the people to then be sorry. Not necessarily sorry they ever did the sin, but sorry they got busted and had to suffer. And eventually they cry out to God, "Please send us another judge, send us another savior, another strong leader." And so God will do that. And the cycle will start back over again. Now we see repeated here that Joshua did that initial sweep through the country of the Canaanites and took out the core of the fortified cities and their kings, and that became the area from which the 12 tribes were supposed to spread out and occupy the fullness of the promised land in their different regions. And God was going to go ahead of them and help them out supernaturally. But because the Israelis very early on started disobeying and not going and occupying their tribal areas, God said, "Fine, if you're going to be that way, I am not going to kick any more of these peoples out. They are going to become a thorn in your eyes. They're going to become a thorn in your side. They're going to be a problem for you." So that information is repeated here in the book of Judges, just like we were told back in the book of Joshua. And that means all the places that Joshua had not touched during his initial sweep, they're all still intact with Canaanites, as well as some of the areas that the Canaanites have reoccupied since Joshua's initial sweep. So chapter 3 gives us some of that information. Now these are the nations, the people groups, the ethnic groups, that He Who Is left to test Israel by them. That is, all Israel who had not experienced all the wars in Canaan. So we're talking about that next generation that didn't have to fight under Joshua when they first came in to the country. So we've got a new group that were teenagers or have been born since then. And if Joshua died about 25 years into the time in Canaan, you know and see that it's that upcoming group underneath them that is now supposed to be occupying the land, and they're not. God gives them a generational opportunity to do the right thing, and each generation seems to fail. Verse 2. It was only in order that the generations of the people of Israel might know war, to teach war to those who had not known it before. These are the nations, the five lords of the Philistines. So the Philistines occupy the Mediterranean coast on the south side of the Promised Land. They are actually mostly in Judah and Dan territory. I think there's a little bit up into Ephraim. Five main cities and a lot of flat land around them that they are in control of. And then all the Canaanites of the Sidonians and the Hivites who lived on Mount Lebanon from Mount Baal Hermon as far as Lebo Hamat. Now, that would be up in the north. Tyre and Sidon were independent cities never included in the boundaries of the Promised Land. But they have regions to the east of them that was supposed to be folded into the Promised Land. And that area up there was never conquered by Joshua. And so these Israelis of the following generations were supposed to dislodge them, and they're not getting it done. We're talking here about everything between Tyre and Sidon and Mount Hermon, which is easy enough to see on any modern-day map. So that area is still occupied. Verse 4, they were for the testing of Israel to know whether Israel would obey the commandments of He who is, which He commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. So the people of Israel lived among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now these are different subgroups of the Canaanite peoples who have been living in this region for hundreds of years under their sin, and now they were under the judgment of God, and the Israelis were supposed to boot them out. And that's not happened as it was supposed to. Verse 6, their daughters they took for themselves for wives, and their own daughters they gave to their sons, and they served their gods. So we've got this intermarrying between two faith groups. The Israelis are supposed to be of the faith of the one true God, and the Canaanites, all these different ites, they worship Baal and Ashtaroth and a multitude of other gods in their pantheon, and they were not supposed to intermarry because of the faith issue. But the Israelis of these new generations have blown that off. And that is why God decides to judge them. Verse 7. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of He who is. They forgot He who is their God and served the Baalim and the Ashtaroth. And therefore the anger of He who is was kindled against Israel, and He sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. Now, the name here means the double-cursed Cushan. And the region that he's from is from Aram, pretty much due north of Israel, just up past the bend in the Euphrates River. The region from which Abram came at the very beginning of our Genesis story about the Israeli people. So he has figured out that he can go down and plunder these Israelis, these former slaves, and take all that booty back to his area. So he does it. And he does it for 8 years because God doesn't put up a barricade against him. Verse number 9. But when the people of Israel cried out to he who is raised up a deliverer for the people of Israel who saved them. Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. So this is a guy that lives down in the south of the Promised Land, down just past Hebron at Debir. He's the younger brother of Caleb, who's probably passed away by now. And God says, you need to go and defend the northern boundaries. Verse 10, the spirit of he who is was upon him, and he judged Israel. He went out to war, and he who is gave Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, into his hand, and his hand prevailed over Cushan-Rishathaim. So God empowers Caleb's younger brother, Othniel, to be the first judge of the Israeli people after Joshua's death. And 8 years, probably, after Joshua's death, God leads him up to the north boundary. He engages the forces of Cushan-Rishathaim and beats them soundly and resecures that northern border. And then he becomes the new leader for the people of Israel for the rest of his life. And he probably lives up to in his first century and just slightly beyond. And so verse 11 says, the land had rest 40 years. Then Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. And that will start the whole cycle over again, as we will see in the near future. Well, when we come back tomorrow, we're going to go to the appendix portion of the book of Judges and see another event that I believe took place during that latter part of the 40 years of rest under Othniel, the son of Kenaz.